Okay, so today we are doing the second half of Mishnah 10 in chapter 3. It is not presumably related to the first half, which we did last week, which spoke about Ruach HaBrios, whether or not we can combine, or how do we balance gaining Hashem's favor and other people's favor and the relationship between those two. Here's a relatively totally different statement from Rabbi Dosa ben Horkanus. So let's read what he says here. The main topic that we're going to be covering today, if we put all of his statements, his whole statement together, seems to be a message of productivity. So Rabbi Dosa ben Horkanus Omer, Rabbi Dosa ben Horkanus says, and I just, in the first source when I gave you the Mishnah, I broke this down. There's four parts and then a conclusion. So the first part is Shena shel Shacharis, sleeping in the morning, V'yayin shel Saharayim, and drinking wine in the middle of the day, V'sichas Yeladim, it's a little bit unclear what that means, talking to children, talking like children, and four, V'yeshivas Bate Knesio shel Ame Haaretz, sitting and hanging out with the assemblies of the Ame Haaretz, here translated as the ignorant. So all of these things, presumably on their own, each one on their own, is motzian esa adam min ha'olam, can take somebody out of this world. Now, sometimes we use the term out of this world as a good thing. Here it doesn't mean a good thing. The question that we have to raise is, what world are we talking about? Right? Are we talking about this world? Are we talking about olam haba, olam hazeh? What's the message of the Mishnah? Something that we'll see that the commentators are going to deal with. Yeah. Yeah, so I guess you could read it either way. You could read it that you need all four of these to be motzi and asad min ha'olam. The only problem with a statement like that is that you would have to work very hard to understand why you would need these four things together to be motzi asad min ha'olam. Presumably these are just four examples of things that are bad for you or have some negative aspect to it. Maybe all together is what is motzi min ha'olam, but okay, let's keep it as a question for now, whether you need each one or they're as a total, you need all four together in order to be motzi asa'ada min ha'olam. So we're going to start with some relatively straightforward, simple explanations, and as we go on, we're going to build to understand a little bit more depth. I do reiterate the same thing that I think I've been reiterating almost every single shiur for the past few weeks, is that there are two ways, and especially it hinges on how you understand ha'olam, right? If ha'olam means next world, then presumably this is a spiritual type of idea. These four things are spiritually bad for you. If you understand that olam means this world, now, it could also mean that it's spiritually bad, but it also opens up the possibility that there's a physical toll involved here. That these things can cause some level of death, of damage, of danger. So we have to understand as we go forward, are we talking about here a spiritual damaging or a physical damaging? Is there a naturalistic explanation as to why these four things would be bad for us? So let's start with Rabbeinu Yonah. He's going to give us a quick rundown as to what he thinks the four things are and why they're bad. So Rabbi Dosa ben Horkanus, thank you for that. Rabbi Dosa ben Horkanus says, source number one, Shena shel Shacharis. What's wrong with Shena shel Shacharis? Shemivateles hatfila bizmana. So what's wrong with sleeping in the morning? You're not going to be able to daven. You have other mitzvos that you have to do, and you're going to miss davening, you're going to miss Kriya Shema, right? So that's a very religious answer, right? There is something that there's a mitzvah for you to do, and you sleeping in is going to make you not be able to do that mitzvah. Yayin shel Tzoharayim, wine during the day, what's the problem with that? Shemivatel Talmud Torah umevi lidei avera. Again, a very spiritual, religious answer. If I drink in the middle of the day, what's it going to cause? I'm not going to be able to learn, and it might cause me to do some sort of sin. I lose my inhibitions, and there's a religious aspect that's bad here. V'sichas ha'yiladim. What about the speech of children? She'oso ha'sha'ashua moshech es libos b'nei adam al yidei ahavasam es hana'arim v'nimseis ha'torah misbatelas. So, you're playing with this. I think grandparents can understand this better than parents, right? You're playing with your kids, you're playing with your grandkids, and it's so fun and it's so exciting, and you love them and you adore them and you can't get enough of them. Kids too, but when they're your own kids, you understand the separation sometimes. But for grandkids, like, I really want this. I really want to hang out with them, right? So now you're, most of us, and this is a recurring theme that's going to go on through this morning's shiur towards the end. We're going to culminate with a big dispute about this. Most of us might read this and say, come on, why is he ranking against the grandkids? Right? They're awesome. He's basically saying that you shouldn't talk to them, right? You shouldn't hang out with them because it's going to, you know, instead of learning, you're going to spend too much time with them. So you could teach them in theory, but the argument is, and I think what he's saying is that for the most part, when you hang out with them, you want to teach them, but what do they want to do? They want to play, right? So they're, and since they're so cute, they're going to win that battle. Right, so you're going to end up playing with them, and you're not going to be able to learn. But the interesting thing is also, is that I want to bring your attention to this. Let's say you're right, and that even you'd be able to teach them. From a purely learning perspective, even though we love teaching and teaching's great, right? If you're teaching your three-year-old, that's not really perfecting your intellect, if you will. And if the goal of Talmud Torah is to reach these lofty peaks of intellectual perfection, you know, teaching the Aleph Beis is great, but it's not going to get you there. So there's going to be, as we go on again, there's going to be a tension. I want this to be a tension as we go through the sources to see how the commentators are going to be dealing with this concept of hanging out, playing with little kids, and what that does to us. Yeah. Okay, good. We'll see that shortly, to time constraint limitations. He doesn't say that as of right now. He's saying that they seem to be inherently bad on their own, but let's see. V'yeshivas batei knesios shel amei ha'aretz, hanging out with the ignorant, if you will, v'kama ra'os v'yeshivas knesios. And he just points out that bad things happen there. Whatever you want to use your imagination, some other commentators will say things more explicitly. There's lashon hara, there's cursing, they're wasting time. So you don't want to hang out with them. Don't get mixed up with the wrong crowd. And now, culminating, so what's bad about all these things together? Hein motzien es ha'adam min ha'olam, ki aman nivra adam ach lasok b'torah. Right? Straight up, our ultimate purpose is learning, and these four things impede on that learning. V'hi orach yamim v'shnos chayim, the Torah is what gives us long life. V'im lokeachu dvarim ke'ela, when he does these things. V'lam alochayim, so what do you need life for? If Torah is the ultimate purpose, and you're doing these things that take you away from Torah, you're showing that you don't care about life. Again, an extreme statement. Of Eroi Litardim and Olam, and it's befitting that you don't. I don't know exactly how extreme you want to translate this. Let's say enjoy. You don't. Eroi Litardim and Olam. It makes sense for you to be cast out from the world.
This is an extreme
view. Yes, ki hevel hu behevel yama va'achar shach. Right, your whole life is hevel. Va'achar shachayek kamashana v'nisasek v'isko v'lo hoil. You worked. You weren't really successful. You don't have Torah. What's the point of having a longer life? A king. It's a parable. King gives his servant $100 or whatever it is. And he throws the money away. And he asks for more. He shouldn't give him any more. God's giving you life. He's giving you days. He's giving you years. And you're wasting it away. And because of that, why should you have any more life? Now, this is a theoretical answer. He's not saying, per se, that these things will naturally lead you to death. And he's not even saying that God's necessarily going to, going to take your life early. But he is saying that from a broad philosophical or theoretical or theological perspective, there's no reason why you should be living if you're not spending your time learning Torah. Again, a stark, harsh statement. Maybe. But again, so take isolate the grandkid thing for a second, and let's look at the other three, right? And then we'll get to the grandkids a little bit later. We'll elaborate on it, but from a broad perspective of how we use our time, the point is that if we do things that are taking us away from Torah and we're not learning, then that's a problem. Now, we have to then ask the next question. So why these four things, right? Why are they just say Bittul Torah is bad? Why is he saying these four things are bad? And that's going to get to what Fred was talking about in a second. These four things are bad. I'm not, you know, what's worse? Just not learning. We'll just say, you know, not learning is bad. So we'll have to see why these examples are used. We'll see that in the next source, but yeah. Okay, if you want to understand Ha'olam as society,
the world at large.
So Shena Shel Shacharis could isolate you. You're not involved in the world. Yayin Shel Tzaraim, you're depending who you're drinking. You're Yayin Shel Tzaraim with, right? The Sichas Yoladim is a little bit harder because it presumes, meaning you're saying that you're speaking to kids instead of adults.
In other words,
maybe.
If you're involved with family things, then you might tend to neglect friendships.
Right. So the problem with that is then you get, especially with number four, Yeshivas Batei Knesiyot Shalami Haaretz, is inherently that you're socializing. Right? So you want to say that you're socializing, but not... So you're not taking care of the broader world. So you could read it that way. As far as I saw, none of the commentators do, but it doesn't mean it's wrong.
Because right? The Mishnah also says with Korach, you know, the Hakinat, Abam HaKlov, which
is... Let's say Sadam HaLam. So when we get there, we'll understand what that means too.
So there, okay.
Okay, good. So let's see source number two. Let's
start with a, because it's really late and you're drinking the afternoon and then
okay, so it's a spiraling down, starting with sleeping late, drinking in the afternoon. We'll see it in a little bit later that there are those who give each one of these as a stage in life, right? Starting off early in life, middle life, end of life, but I hear what you're saying too, is that your day can progress like this. You get up late, oh, it's already late, my day's wasted, might as well drink, oh, I have nothing to do, I can't focus on anything learning, so I might as well just, you know, waste my time with doing things that are not productive. But okay, I hear that. Let's see source number two, the Meiri. This gets back to what Fred was talking about. Rabbi Dosa ben Horkinus Omer, Shena Shel Shacharis. Hu ba lahazir. So what's his point? He's ba lahazir minatanugim v'hamosaros. So two things. There's joyful pleasures. Okay, so we have to be careful about joyful pleasures. But it's not just joyful pleasures. It's excessive joyful pleasures. Mosaros. V'hizkir shehem shena shel shacharis v'yayin shel tzaharayim. V'eilu b'vadehem mosar gamur. So sleeping in the morning and drinking in the afternoon are extra. They're excessive. You already slept the whole night. So what are you sleeping now? Right? We're obviously not talking about somebody who works a night shift. Right? We're talking about people who slept all night, and instead of getting up in the morning, you say, I'm going to sleep in. Okay, what are you sleeping in for? You just slept the whole night. So here's an interesting one. This gets to cultural differences in how we drink. So the assumption was you were drinking during the meal. So you're allowed to drink wine during the meal. But this is Yayin Shel Tzaraim, is the after party, right? Is the wine that you have after the meal. Remember, they didn't have a choice of like a million beverages. And so they were limited in what they had. Right, they couldn't have a period of that to concentrate, so they were drinking. The question is, how much are you drinking, and in what context are you drinking? So they weren't drinking to get drunk. They were drinking because that's what they needed to drink. So the question is, are you drinking in the course of a meal? Okay, you're drinking a little bit. It's not going to get you drunk. It's going to digest with the food a little bit, and it's not going to go overboard. But now you finished eating, and now you're drinking? That's the problem. That's the mosar. That's why it's excessive. The ain elu balim el derech ta'anuk. So those are definitionally just coming for pleasurable purposes. You're not doing it to fulfill any basic biological needs like sleep and eating. This is just overboard and over the top. Sha'adam nishtaka behem umonim hashlemos mimenu. When he goes a little bit further, it's not just that it's derech ta'anuk. There's an added element here, is that we're nishtaka behem. What does that mean, nishtaka behem? We get stuck. We get sunk in. They bring us in. Umonim ashleimus mimeno. And then another element is that they prevent us from perfecting ourselves. And then after we talk about these biological necessities that are going overboard and you're just doing it for the pure pleasure purposes, we're adding two more things that people should be careful about that are moshchim lev ha'adam. What's moshchim lev ha'adam? They draw you in. Same thing as the nishtaka. They draw you in. They pull you in. You start for 5 minutes, and then before you know it, you're stuck because you're spending hours doing it because it feels good. It's pleasurable. It's nice. It's fun. It draws you in. The gormin lo betela, and it causes one to totally waste their time. And that is the speaking to the children, or speaking children type talk, and hanging out in these batei kinesios shel amei haaretz. Now, notice he doesn't say they're inherently bad. What does he say?
Within limits.
Well, it's not just that within limits, but they're within limits, but you have to be careful because they're things that draw you in. So there's a very tight balance that one has to make here, is that these are things that aren't inherently bad, but you could easily get sunk into them, so therefore maybe you have to be very more extra careful. Maybe his point is that we have to be fully aware, maybe set timers when we do things like this, for whatever reason we might be doing it, even if it's positive, that these are things that maybe I have to babysit or whatever, but within limits. Because there's another goal that should always be on the top of our hierarchy, which is Lima Torah. That's on the top. That's on the top. Now again, the classic questions apply to women too. Within reason, probably not to the extreme, but again, it depends what our responsibilities are. And it depends how we're creating this hierarchy. And if the hierarchy is, am I going to watch TV or learn Torah? Then presumably in this Mishnah, putting in watching TV would be Motzias Adam Min HaOlam, because more important on that hierarchy is doing stuff that is more spiritually productive, whether it's learning Chesed, Mitzvos, etc. To each it's his or her own. Yeah, fine.
Several of these are, maybe all of them are, escape mechanisms from life. And okay. I'm wondering whether focusing on Limitor is the paradigm that we're all supposed to be aiming for. Between learning Torah as an ideal and as a goal, and self-perfection as a goal, mm-hmm. assuming that they are mutually exclusive, because I'm spending all this time learning Torah, I don't have time to perfect myself and my own character, which of the two is most important?
Perfecting character or perfecting Torah?
Yeah.
And so that gets to the core of what Pirkei Avos is all about. Meaning, so Pirkei Avos, the Rambam at the beginning of his introduction to Shemona Prokim, talks about there's really two perfections that we're going for. One is Shleimos HaMidos, and one is Shleimos HaSeichel. Shleimos HaSeichel, the intellect, perfecting the intellect, is at the top of that hierarchy. But you need the Shleimos HaMidos in order to get to that hierarchy, in order to get to the Shleimos HaSeichel. So all of this is interwoven together, that I need to perfect myself, but remember, it's in order for me to get to the Torah.
So these are concurrent goals, or this is the first one, self-perfection, in order to achieve Torah learning?
So that's a good question. Again, I would say that gets into other Mishnayos, right? These are you're asking at the core of the of what we're talking about Pirkei Avos. It gets into, is Yiras Cheto Kodemes L'Chachmaso, and all of these things that we've been talking about. And at the point of our conclusion that we've made so far is as Dr. Fruchter just motioned with her hands, it's cyclical. It pushes into each other, and you need a little bit of chachma in order to be able to work on the midos, and you work on the midos and it increases the chachma, and then you work on your midos some more. And this is life goal, forever. This is stuff that we work on, and they feed into each other. But it's a good question. And notice until now, I think you're right to highlight that the commentators have been focusing almost exclusively on Torah as the ideal to perfect that seichel, but perhaps these things are important even if you isolate Torah from the equation, and that Shena Shel Shacharis and Sichas HaYiladim and Yayin Shel Tzaraim and all these things can prevent me from being in a perfected social atmosphere that might be required for living a Torah life, or it might prevent me from doing other things that are important, the mitzvos, etc., work, You know, it's just general, broader, not just Torah related, learning Torah related, but general, broader productivity messages that these things get you to not be productive. Right? Because they're excessive and because they draw you in. They're things that are pleasurable inherently, and there's like this, and anybody who's experienced any of these things, which is probably all of us, right? That head on the pillow in the morning is, it's almost like a magnet, right? It's a magnet. And how do you break that, you know, connection, right? And if you've ever drank wine, right, you have a little bit. It's very hard to have, you know, you can't just have one potato chip. It's very hard to have a little bit of wine because it draws you. It brings you in. Same thing with speaking to kids. It's cute. It's fun. They're adorable. And then it brings you in. You're sitting and schmoozing. That social pressure, that social enjoyment brings you in. So these are all things that are against productivity, assuming that they inherently aren't the actual goal. Okay, so let's look at source number 3. So this is the Merkavas HaMishnah. I gave you a little bit of a biographical snippet. 15th century, born in Spain and was kicked out. So he says here as follows. Hinei, kefi zos hashita, efshar shiforshu elu hamamarim kefi zmanei ha'adam. This gets back to what I referenced before. We can understand these comments as being related to a developmental perspective. Keneged zman hayaldus amar, when it comes to our being children or young, in our young age, that's representative of Shena Shel Shachris. V'hu shebala hazir shetzarach adam shiar mishnaso. So when you're young, it's encouraging us to be awake, to not be in this slumber. V'yazayir b'limudo v'yazkaber al yetzahara, to try very hard with learning and to overcome the Yetzirah, v'zeu amru shena shel shachris. And we all know it, either from ourselves or from seeing other people, right? When we're able to instill, or when somebody has the fortune of being, I don't know, parents or environment or teachers who encourage the person as a child, as a teenager, to sit, to learn, to work on themselves, to be productive, to get those habits and those tips, they are so far ahead of, you know, when they get to 22, 25, 28, and they're trying to figure out what they want to do with their lives, they have such a leg up over people who wasted their teenage years and, you know, and did stuff that wasn't productive, right? So this is the Shena Shel Shachris, is if we have the fortune and if we read this Mishnah as a kid and encourage ourselves to be productive, to learn, to take advantage of our time, it goes a very long way in terms of our later life productivity. That's in terms of the beginning of life. Next part of life, Keneged Zman HaAmida, sort of middle age, Amar, V'yayin Shel Tzaharayim, right, the afternoon of our lives, Shehu Be'emsa Hayom, it's the middle of our lives, Keneged Zman HaYurida, Shehu Zman HaZikna V'aseva, Amar, and the sort of our golden years, the older we are, that's the Sichas HaYiladim V'yeshivas Batei Knesios. So why is that? You know, talking to the grandkids or talking to, you know, hanging out in shul. Batam she'ein shukas hazaken ki lasua. So it's like, when we get older, what do we want to do? We want to talk. We got to tell our stories. We got to say what our life was about. V'zeu shelo yar b'sicho. So now the message is, okay, that's nice, but we also got to learn. Lo imal yiladim v'lo imal amei aratzos. So limit the amount of story time we have because we have to do other things as well. So at each stage of life is a different pull to waste time, to not be productive, whatever it is. And we have to overcome that. We have to try to be as productive and learn it as possible. Now, keep going. Next paragraph, he says another interesting point. V'hine, masha samach zel adiver Rabbi Chanina v'zulaso, v'fi kish Rabbi Chanina v'zulaso kasu trufos la'adam v'meshel yishkach tamudo. So we've seen in the past Mishnayos that talk about how do we improve our memory and how are we productive when it comes to that. Remember we said if you forget something of learning, that's really bad. So what's the connection to this? I'm going to tell you what are the things, the poisons, the diseases that can be created that we can do to cause ourselves problems. What are the things that we can do to cause ourselves problems? And the reason I'm going to tell you this, he says, "V'alkein tzarich adam lizar meham," so you can be very careful about them. "V'im nizar eino tzarich refuah." If you're careful, right, it's called primary prevention. If you're careful about not falling into these traps, then you'll be able to be more productive. Yishtad delasos refuah satshiyachzor. So kvar amru chachmei refuah shigeder refuah hishmiras abrios. The best way to have health is to protect that health when you actually have it. Vushi Yizar, have good habits. Vushi Yizar, shlo ya'achal, davar shi'av yado dechol. Don't eat things that cause us damage. Amnam im chala. But now, once I'm already sick, yishtad delasos refuos at shi'achzor lebrios, then I have to already have some sort of medicine. So that's the already reactive, not proactive. Bine advar masher zachar, these things that we're mentioning, shehem mevim li dechol lihem shena shel shachars. These are bad. These bring us to sickness. Now, is he talking about physical sickness or spiritual sickness? I don't know. He didn't say it. Right? Where did he say spiritual sickness?
Because he's using the physical as a metaphor.
And these are the four things. So let's keep that in mind. I don't think it's clear as of right now. I hear what you're saying, that the metaphor implies that the learning is on something spiritual, but he doesn't, as far as I understood, he doesn't say it explicitly. He's talking about these things bring sickness, and as we know, doctors tell us that when you're sick, that's bad, try to prevent being sick. Okay? So keep going. Vihine. Bamesha Amar, third paragraph. Bamesha Amar Motzina Sa'adamina Olam. This gets to the crux of our issue. What does it mean that you're being removed from this world? Or a world. Yesh Misha Perish Shahu Midaber Keneged Olam Abba. There are those who say it's talking about the next world. And if it's talking about the next world, then presumably it's talking about spiritual. But he says, Ve'ein zen nirah. I don't think that's true. Now the reason why he doesn't think it's true, and you can read it on your own, but I'll just say it outside, is because what does it mean that you're, if you're talking about the next world, what does it mean that it's motzi you from the next world? The assumption, it sounds, the way he's reading it, is that you are in, let's say, Gan Eden, and these things are motzi you from Gan Eden and put you into Gehenna. That doesn't make any sense because you wouldn't have been in Gan Eden in the first part. So the word motzi, to take out, doesn't make sense. Right? It's a little bit of a nuanced point. It doesn't make sense to take you out because you wouldn't have been put in the first place. Right? It's almost like the assumption isn't that you have this and that you're getting taken out of it. You have to earn it. So you didn't have it, so we're not taking you out of it. So because of that, his assumption is that motzina sa'adam in ha'olam can't mean next world, because you're not taken out, you weren't put in the first place. We're not going to get it. That's what he's just saying.
And the only thing we can do is mess up. And
right, so if you understand it that way, then perhaps his argument isn't accurate. But as we're actually, something that we didn't do, which we should have done, and maybe we'll do it in the future, is that there's a custom to say Kol Yisrael Yeshem Chelek L'Mava before you say Pirkei Avos. So there is a custom to do that, and there are reasons, maybe we'll spend this year, when we're done with Pirkei Avos, explaining why that's the custom. But within that discussion, there, as usual, there are some commentators who say that when it says Kol Yisrael Yisham Chelek, it doesn't mean every single Jew, because that's problematic also. Why are you guaranteed Olam Haba? Right? You're a terrible person. All you did is Averus. Why are you guaranteed Olam Haba?
So,
but you see, that's from a, you could make an argument that makes sense that you have to earn it. There's no free pass here. You don't get Olam Haba for nothing, right? So even though this phrase states, and this is where you guys are coming from, Kol Yisrael Yesham Chelek Olam Haba, so we're saying, oh, it's mine, and I have to lose it. There are those commentators who say when it says Kol Yisrael, it doesn't mean every Jew, it means all the good Jews, right? Kol Yisrael Yesham Chelek Olam Haba, and that you have to earn it to get in. So that's presumably what he's assuming here is, and I'll take your question, but I don't want to get into this discussion right now, because this is just a side point. His point is that I don't think it means next world because of this reason. You could argue with that reason, but for our purposes for now, his end goal of this Mishnah means that you're being taken out from this world, not the next world. Yes. Yeah. No, so then now we're opening up a whole can of worms here. What does Olam Haba mean? Does Olam Haba mean Gan Eden? Does it mean Tchias HaMeisim? Does it mean Yemos HaMashiach? Enter, tons of discussions that we're not getting into. But good question. Now, keep going. So there are those who say, that's beyond the scope. We're not going to finish reading that paragraph, but let's go to the next paragraph. So Amnam. Hanira Yoser, who she'inyan amru motzien es adam, it seems more to me that when it says motzien es adam, who she'yamus below ito, it means that you are going to die before your destined time. Now this is stronger formulation than Rabbeinu Yonah. When Rabbeinu Yonah said that it's going to be motzi you from the world, he was, as we've highlighted then, he was just saying that you don't really deserve to live, right? But it doesn't mean you're going to die. Here he's saying explicitly, you will be taken away before your time. But, what's our question? Is this a naturalistic explanation, right? If I, if I jump off a bridge, I will be taken away before my time. That is true. That's because that's natural, right? If I drink myself into I pass out and die of whatever, I will be taken before my time because I caused that to my biology, right? Or, what's the alternative explanation? Is that God's going to judge you and punish you, and then you're going to be killed or whatever for whatever reason. So is this a biological, naturalistic explanation? Or is this a spiritual, God-intervening explanation? So let's see what he says. So, hu sheyamos b'lo ito, o yamos misa mikris. You're going to just coincidentally, haphazardly die. O misa krisos. That is, that God's going to take you early. So he gives you all the options. Right? You'll either die naturally, or you'll die randomly, or God will take you for some reason. Behine. Let's keep going. Elu hadalad mumin he misababin zeha'inyan. These four things are related to this concept. Behine bamesha hischil ba'amar. Shena shel shacharis, where it's underlined when it says shena shel shacharis. So let's now give an explanation as to why this is going to remove you from the world. Hushamargilas asmo babidas ha'atzalah. What are you doing? You're lazy. You're training yourself to be lazy. Ukvar yadat ha'hezek shiagia la'adam in ha'atzlus. We already know the terrible things that are going to happen to you if you're lazy. What are the things that are going to happen to you if you're lazy? Shetismait parnasaso. You're not going to get paid. You're not going to get paid. You're not going to work. Vimlo yimsamayokha. So now if you don't have what to eat, what are you going to do? Yelech ligno velastimus abrios. You're going to go and you're going to steal. Vine hisibos yagol de sakana. Now you're going to steal. Now you're in danger. Viara go. You're going to get involved with the mob and they're going to kill you. Vinimsa shigorim nezek laatzmo. You caused yourself to get damage. Viyatsamina olamazeb lo ito. And you have removed yourself from this world before your time. That's a very natural explanation. This isn't God punishing you. This is you causing yourself to get involved with the wrong crowd because you're lazy, and then you're going to end up getting, thrown into jail or worse. Od Amru, keep going. It's very fascinating. Od Amru, medieval biology here. Od Amru, Chachmei Harafua. So the scientists of the day wrote, Shirov Hashena Mechabe Hachom Hativi. Too much sleeping causes us problems biologically. The biological explanation of the time was that it extinguishes your body heat, if you will. Umashaparat shena shel shacharis yoser mishara shenos. So why, if I'm telling you that too much sleep is bad, why does it matter too much sleep in the morning? Too much sleep in general is bad. Lefisha mavad sheyimshach miroba shena nezek leguf. You're right. It's terrible to sleep too much whenever. But here you have an added problem. Gam kein b'emsos hashena over averus shemivatel onas kriyashma. Now we're adding an additional aspect, not just the biological, natural, lazy aspect that's causing you bodily harm, but you're also having a spiritual problem. There's a side effect is that you're going to miss kriyashma shel shacharis. V'gam kein ina osik b'torah b'zman kriyasa, and you're not learning. She'ein zman mufchar lo motor yoser misof alayla, because it's very good to learn to get up early in the morning, late at night, to learn Torah. Say Omad to David, that's what David did. Kachatzos halayla. And that's the reason why it's bad. And then if he quotes the pasuk from Tehillim, and then he says v'zeh yisabev lo kotzer achayim. Now this is the end of the line. Shatora hino senes arichos yamin. Now he adds another thing into the mix. Torah gives us long life. So you're adding, he's combining biological, natural explanation. Sleeping too much is bad for you medically. In addition to that, learning Torah, which you're not doing because you're sleeping, would have extended your life. So now your life is cut shorter than it could have been or than it should have been. Okay, so that gives us sleeping. What about wine? Now this probably doesn't need too much of an explanation for anybody who's seen the damages that alcohol could do. So like the Rabbeinu Yonah said, this is talking about drinking when you are, sorry, not this Rabbeinu Yonah, this was, I think the Meiri said, that when you're drinking in the middle of the meal, not such a big deal. But here you're drinking after the meal. This is after you actually had your meal. We already know how terrible it is to get drunk. So it causes you to go blind, apparently, or at least diminish eyesight. There you go again. It diminishes your natural body heat. So whatever these, again, medieval diseases were, insert modern medical explanations as to why it's really bad to drink a lot. It's going to destroy your liver. It's going to, you know, all the things that's bad medically about drinking. The getting drunk is reason why we get sick, and it shortens our lifespan. But why does it shorten our lifespan? So not just the biological reasons, but what else is going to happen? Those 15 year old bottles of scotch cost a lot of money, right? So you're going to lose all your money. And then again, you're not going to have what to eat. And you're going to end up stealing and robbing in order to, you know, get your fix. Right? So another reason why your life is going to be shorter. What? Drunk driving. All the reasons. This is naturalistic, biological explanations as to why drinking is bad for you and will shorten your life. Now those are the two easy ones. Now we have to get to the talking to your grandkids and talking to the Amei Aratzos, but we'll get there in a second. Yeah, Freddie? You had something or no?
No, I just want to say that the Mishnah seems to be generic. This can be by the Gentiles.
Yeah, this is, again, it's a biological explanation that this is bad for you in general. Good. Good. Next, Bamum Ashlishi, Husichas Hayiladim, Ukfar Yad. I can see I'm getting ready for this. Okay, Ukfar Yadas Shekol Sichas Hayiladim VaAtzasam Hi Nivara. Now, this is actually going to help you because what he's doing is he's reinterpreting what does it mean Sichas Hayiladim. So we explained it as almost metaphorically that it means speaking to your grandkids. That's not what it means according to him. What does it mean? Let's go Tanakh people, start thinking. What does it mean, Sichas Hayiladim? The speaking to the youthful people, the young people, the teenagers, if you will, or the people in their 20s, right? So keep going. Look what he says. V'atzasam hi nivara uvinyanam satira. When they try to build, it destroys. V'hamisnaig al pi atzasam sof shi'aved. When you take their advice, that's the problem. He's not talking about playing with your grandkids. He's talking about that you're listening to the advice of the people without experience. Right? So what is that going to remind us of? Viraya, me, Rechavam ben Shlomo. This gets back to Tanakh. Right? So when you listen to those who are young, who don't have life experience, over those who are old and wise and have life experience, that's going to cause you problem. The Ode Shirov Devrayim Nivul Sapeh. These teenagers have quite some mouths, right? So they curse all the time. And we know it's really bad to curse. You're wasting your time. And then back to the old explanation. You're wasting your time. So what's going to happen? You're not going to be productive. You're going to lose your money. You're going to end up stealing. You're going to end up getting shot. All the whole nine yards. Back to why this is going to limit your life. So again, so this is a good explanation if you want to get out of the controversy of, if you will, of the, you know, talking to your grandkids. And now, what about the fourth one? Ba'amum ha'arvi hu yeshivas batei kenesio shel amei ha'aretz. So you're hanging out with this crowd, with these ignorants. They're eating too much, they're drinking too much. They speak lashon hara. They joke around too much. What's going to happen? It's going to cause sinas habrios. How is it going to cause sinas habrios? It's going to cause hatred amongst people. So he doesn't explain it explicitly, but it sounds like he's saying that then you're going to get into like gangs, right? You have this crowd likes this crowd, and then you're going to get to this clique like this clique, and then what's going to happen? The epsha shasiba zeh yaharbu bo ha'oivim, right? You're going to create enemies, and the enemy, right? You're getting into the wrong crowd. V'nimsa shekatzer yamav v'nosef al hakol shi'is batam v'divrei Torah asher hinitz chayim v'nifer mimenu hu behepa. And he ends off with the same spiritual explanation that learning Torah lengthens your life, and this is going to shorten your life, both because you're A, not learning Torah, and B, because inherently you're going to lead down a wrong path that's going to end you with the wrong crowd. You're not going to have any money, and you're going to get caught up in getting shot or whatever, and then you're going to die early. Right, so it's a pretty powerful and interesting explanation, which seems to combine the natural and the more spiritual reasons as to why it's going to end your life early. So flip the page.
The assumptions are pretty simplistic. If you do this, the cause and effect of each one of them will bring you a whole litany of things. It might.
I don't think he's saying this is automatically going to happen, but it's probabilistic. But this is what's going to, right? Not everybody who's, you know, to give you an example from modern day, if you will, you know, not every teenager who smokes marijuana is going to end up being a drug addict, right? But, you know, it happens, right? And that's not something we want to be encouraging or doing, right? So it doesn't have to be teenagers, right? The adults too, but yeah.
To me, it's too broad of a stroke. We have Melissa Benazaria was 18 years old, we assume position from Caplio, and you have to, you know, drop lower than that. Miriam gave tremendous peace of her father about that.
So context matters. You could have a young child who is very intuitive and has great advice. That could be. But again, Al Pi Rov, for the most part, if you're going to make all of your decisions based on these people who don't have the life experience, it could lead to bad things. Okay, so let's one more and I'll keep going. So the question was how can you die before your time if God sets the time? So this is a classic medieval debate and discussion. And broadly, the answer is that you have a set time. But I can shoot myself in the head. I just God wants me to die at 80, and now I'm 30, and I, you know, that's before my time. I have the free will. It gets into free will, right? Do I have the free will? Is everything predestined? Is everything determined? There's a plan for me, but I have the ability to change that. And now the real question is, do other people have the ability to change that? Right? So let's say I'm destined to die at 120, and then some drunk driver goes and runs me down. Right? So how does that play into the picture? And so there are discussions of this, and the answer is that it's complex and complicated. But there is a concept of our actions could cause us to die before every cigarette I smoke takes 4 minutes off my life, or whatever the statistics are. The answer is that my actions are causing me to die before I was predetermined by God to die. I have that power. Right?
And the other way too.
Learning could extend your life, yeah. Right. Okay. So maybe he doesn't. Maybe there's a spectrum of time, right? There's a spectrum of time. Again, it gets into a lot of discussion. I think the answer is something along the lines of there are many ways that you can die, whether it's your old age life or some other reason can happen earlier. And it gets into actually some interesting discussions about the Yosef story and him getting thrown into the pit. There's a whole discussion in the Orach Chaim about that as well. His brother's trying to kill him before his time. It's all part of the discussion, but we're gonna table that for now. So flip the page. Somebody give me the time. What time? What do we have?
7 minutes after 10.
7 minutes after 10. Okay. So we have around 8 more minutes. Let's skip 4 for now. You can read it on your own if you want. I'm not sure it adds anything fundamentally different. Let's do a little bit of number 5, and then we'll finish up with a discussion about the way we view playing with children. So source number 5 is the Teferis Yisrael. So Teferis Yisrael, I think, loosens this up a little bit. And if you felt that the previous sources were a little bit too intense, here he's going to take a step back, but still have the same main message. So the Teferis Yisrael says, Rabbi Dosa ben Horkanis, Zachar dalet dvarim shetzrichim ma'od lebrias haguf ulehashlamas ha'adam. So he broadens this out. These are 4 things that we need for our health, as well as for our moral, ethical, intellectual perfections. And if we're not careful with this, meaning it's sort of creating this, I think what he's alluding to is it's creating this strange dynamic here. On one hand, these are for perfection, they're for hashlama, they're for becoming better, but then we're going to the other extreme. It's not just, usually if I tell you these things will help you become more productive, right? The opposite if you don't do that, the opposite is usually not, or you'll die, right? It's that you're not going to be productive. And so here it's almost these 2 extremes. It's like, I want you to perfect yourself or you'll die. Right? So he's saying that there is this sort of black and white to this, is that there really is no middle path, if you will, or middle option. So let's see. Shema shel shachris. Mashal l'chol kovid va'atzla. So this is a reference. It's a metaphor, if you will. It's not just shema shel shachris. Don't get stuck in the example. It's just an example. It's really symbolic of all laziness, right? Laziness is going to be bad for you. For emi uto yafeh. This is very powerful. A little laziness is good. Mi uto yafeh. Bitzarach ma'od lebrias haguf she'anuach acher yegiyaso. We need to rest. We need to relax. A little bit is good. Not every rabbi would tell that to you, right? You're not going to see that in all commentators. But here he says, a little bit of rest is good. But you slept all night, you don't need to sleep anymore. So it's up to us to find this balance of a little relaxing, right? I come home from work, I'm exhausted, I'm tired, so I relax for half hour, or do I relax for 3 hours, right? 10 minutes ahead, whatever the line is, there's miut is okay, too much is the problem. Yayin shel tzaharayim, mashal l'redifas hatanugim. Again, this is not just meaning drinking. It means any time I'm going to go after an excess of pleasurable activities, kishu b'lit tzarach l'chazek haguf, it's not for purposes of physical health. And then, he's going to say similarly, a little bit is okay, but this is too much. Then go to the next one, Sichas Yiladim, who mashal l'schok v'haslus. So this is a mashal. Again, it's not talking specifically about your grandkids. It's talking about, in general, having a good time, relaxing, speaking stupidities, if you will. Shegam kein mi'uto yafeh. A little bit of joking around is okay. Lahavlig l'samech hanefesh, to make yourself feel good, it's refreshing. About Rakim Anasha, but now he says, okay, but there's a context. It has to be with the right people, it has to be at the right time. A limit, context matters, not too much. And then finally, Yeshivas Batei Knesio Shalami Ha'aretz, Mashal Asicha B'Teila, talking about general wasting time through talking. Hu gam kein mi'uto yafa. And you're not going to find a lot of people who are going to say that to you. A little bit of wasted speech is good. Not just that it's okay and acceptable and we do it so we have to put up with it. He says that it's good to talk nonsense every once in a while. Well, I don't know, nonsense is a strong word. That's after after you have some sort of wisdom, you worked all day, you're studying all day, it's okay to shoot the breeze every once in a while to have a good time, because you spent the whole day learning, you got to relax a little bit, get back to the relaxing. But again, miut, a little bit, you can't get carried away. And remember, these are all things, getting back to how we started, that you can easily get carried away with, so you got to be super, super careful. So I think that's a way of just sort of putting the mission into context. All of these are examples, and the main point is be productive. These are things that are good on a small scale, but we have to make sure that we don't get it taken away. And we're gonna end off with, I think, an interesting framing. If you didn't like how we started talking about the grandkids, you're gonna hate the next source, which is okay. We're going to use it as a counterpoint to the following two sources. But source number 6 is written in the 12th century by the Sefer Hasidim, Rav Yehuda Chassid. In general, the Sefer Hasidim is a very intense book. It's very intense. We do not follow most of the things that the Sefer Hasidim says. There's a lot of stuff that has to do with, you know, hurting yourself, chumras, lots of stuff that now in the modern day would be considered a little bit out there, and presumably even then it was considered a little bit out there. These were for the Hasidim, the pious, and it wasn't really that mainstream. So this is what he says in source number 6. Again, don't throw anything at me. About im kibel alav tsa'aros. So he's talking about the ability to accept upon ourselves pain. To, you know, we don't like pain. We don't like to feel bad. So he's saying, no, it's good to feel bad. When is it good to feel bad? You take one for God, right? You take one for the team. Kigon, what's my example of taking the pain? Shimonea mishashua banav uvnosav. You prevent yourself from playing with your kids. Sheyishma shebochim. You hear that they're crying. Ve'ishto migadalasan. And your wife's taken care of them, right? Vehu, now, I think that's, you can read that in two ways. Either you say, oh, let my wife deal with it. There's also a positive spin to this, is that he's not saying abandon your children, he's saying your wife's taking care of them. And in that context, for sure, this was common, even nowadays it's pretty common, but in that context it was for sure that your wife, the woman took care of the kids. Right? So your wife's taking care of the kids, they're not dying, they're not abandoned, they're whatever, but they're crying. So now you have an option. You're sitting and learning, your wife's taking care of them, you can go try to make them feel better. I feel bad. Right? I don't think he means I feel angry because they're crying. I think he means I literally feel their pain, that they're in pain. The Eino Omer Bishvil Sheosek B'Torah. And I don't stand. He doesn't get up. Why? He doesn't stop because he's learning. The Eino Holech L'Tayel Im Banav Yiladav. And you don't go and take a walk with them and take them to the park and take them to the zoo. Al ze yikabel schar, al ze hatzar, vitzar shel gehenna mematim. You get tremendous amount of reward for this pain that you're incurring for not helping your kids. Right? Again, nowadays, this wouldn't really, right? This, I shouldn't infer how you're feeling, but when I read this, I say that this sounds crazy, right? So maybe. But let's see source number 7 and 8, because this is not the only rabbinic perspective. There's a very famous story about the Alter Rebbe, the original Lubavitcher Rebbe. Source number 7, this is from a letter that Lubavitcher Rebbe wrote. The Alter Rebbe shared his house with his oldest married son, Rav Dov Ber, who later succeeded him as the Mitzler Rebbe. Rabbi Dov Ber was known for his unusual power of concentration. Once, when Rabbi Dov Ber was engrossed in learning, his baby, sleeping in its cradle nearby, fell out and began to cry. The infant's father did not hear the baby's cries, but the infant's grandfather, the Alter Rebbe, also engrossed in his studies in his room on the upper floor at the time, most certainly did. He interrupted his studies, went downstairs, picked the baby up, soothed it, and replaced it in its cradle. Through all this, Rabbi Dov Ber remained quite oblivious. Subsequently, the Alter Rebbe admonished his son, no matter how engrossed one may be in the loftiest occupation, one must never remain insensitive to the cry of a child. Your baby's crying, you take care of the baby. And Lubavitch Rebbe then goes in the next paragraph and says this is emblematic of the entire Lubavitch movement. This is what we stand for, is that the cry of the baby isn't just the baby literally, but it's the cry of Am Yisrael, of Klal Yisrael, and it's our job to stop our learning and go to a random place in the middle of nowhere and do our kiruv and make these cries of their souls feel better. Right? That's a very different perspective than the Sefer Chassidim. And in case you want to say, I'm not Chabad, I'm not Lubavitch, I'm not a Chassid, so you can say that. So I'll give you a brisker source for this as well. If you want a more intense on the learning, Rav Chaim Brisker, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, believe me, was somebody who spent his day learning. He didn't go off to the middle of nowhere to do kiruv. He spent his whole day learning. But here's a story from Rav Soloveitchik. There's a book by Rabbi Kefet. He put out a biography of sources about Rav Soloveitchik and Rav Yosef Dov, Levi Soloveitchik, the Rav from YU. So his grandfather was Rav Chaim. So here he's telling stories about Rav Chaim. Here's the story. Source number 8. Once Rav Chaim played horses with them. Right hand side. First the right hand column. Finally, Rav Chaim came. He was just the opposite of his father. He was a Democrat from head to toe, a real plebeian. He was gregarious and fond of all people. I'm thinking of baseball. It did not matter whether they were intelligent or dull, rich or poor, observant or non-observant. Rav Chaim was particularly in love with children. The great Rav Chaim could communicate with children in a way that only a mother can. Brisk residents used to see Rav Chaim surrounded by little boys. He would play games with them. Once, it is a true story, Rav Chaim came out of his house and found a group of children waiting for him. What do you want? He asked the youngsters. We would like to play horses, was the reply. No, so why don't you play? Rav Chaim asked. They responded that nobody wanted to be the horse. They all want to be the drivers or the passengers. Rav Chaim immediately volunteered to be the horse. He was roped, and the little children forced the horse to move on. Left-hand column. Once Rav Chaim played horses with them, and the children got tired and hungry. They told Rav Chaim that they would tie him to the tree while they went home to get a snack. Rav Chaim said, all right. They tied him to the tree with a few good knots, sailor's knots. They went home and forgot about Rav Chaim and their horse tied to the tree. The gabbai of the shul came out and saw Rav Chaim tied to the tree. All this happened in front of the shul. The gabbai said he would take a knife and cut the ropes. Rav Chaim refused because he did not want to disappoint the children. He insisted that the gabbai bring the children to untie him. Right? Totally different perspective. Right? So how do we interact with children? How do we live our lives? So there's a place for this. But you can't play horses all day. Right? Rav Chaim didn't play horses all day. He learned most of the day. But he designated time because both for himself, perhaps, but as well for the other people, for the children, to inspire them, to relate to them, just to have a good time with them, was part of his ethos as well. So we have to find a balance, but the main point of the Mishnah, just broadly speaking, is be productive. Stay away from things that suck us in, the things that draw us to want to have more and more and more. Okay, a little bit of drink turns into a lot of it drink. A little bit of sleep turns into a lot of it sleep. Schmoozing, a little bit okay, a lot is a problem. Hanging out with the grandkids, hanging out with children, whatever it is, that laid backness is good, but within limits. You have to remember what our priorities are.